everybody.
Hi.
I like to be off the cuff, but then I always get here, and all of a sudden I start writing things. So be surprised if I stop myself and I, wait, what? Da-da-da-da. Or I start extrapolating out of nowhere. Because that's me. Exodus is a book, as a book, it's an interesting book. Let me learn how to talk again. Come on, let's start again. Exodus as a book is an interesting one, and while I could go on about the book as a whole, and I will give some overarching context, I will try and keep it to just this story, because it's so short. Because, as it is with biblical stories, there is so much that is and is not there at the same time, which is why we are still able to go to them today, because there is things that we are constantly finding. Now, some of you have known me the time that I've been here, some of you are new faces, and we love that. For those of you who have known me here, you're probably surprised to hear me say that you can find things in the Bible today. When I started coming here, that would not be something that would have come out of my mouth at all. And one of the things that has helped me come to a place where I'm able to find richness in this story is learning how to find the historical and cultural context of the stories from the Bible. And so that is what I hope learning the historical world and literary context of the text itself, there is a richness to these stories that still matter, even if we're not 100% sure what the story is about or the credibility of the story. So on a whole, most scholars, and I would say most readers of Exodus, would be willing to accept that Exodus has themes of revolution and liberation in it. No argument for me there. It's important to know that there is an overarching theme of this book, as it lays much of the groundwork for the Jewish faith and many of their practices. And this story plays a large part in that. It is part of this story of the journey of the Jewish people from being enslaved to freedom, to a land of their own. Yet, they are not there yet. In fact, they are far from it. And in this story, the Jewish people are kind of acting like kids on a road trip, if we're being honest. Like, in the first section, if only we had died, where are we going? Are we very hungry? Why? And to that, Moses and God are the parents in the front seat listening to the complaining children going, are we there yet? I'm hungry. Can we pull over? Why are we going? I don't want to go. And they're going, here, have some snacks. We'll get there when we get there. And to that, they literally say, give them a whatchamacallit. If you go into the meaning of the word manna, it's actually a pun, and it means, what is it? Which I think is probably why Sierra had a little giggle at the what is it part, because if you were to read it, it would say, manna. What is it? It's a whatchamacallit. We don't know. What is it? Gotta love a pun. Anyways, God provides, God provides when the rules are enforced. How much to eat, if you should save some. Still things that kind of lead me on that long road trip that you might be going on. And when the people don't follow the rules, no good comes from it. And when they do, they're fed, they survived. Yay for everyone. This is a story, basic enough, but interesting from a historical standpoint, when you take the story and you look at it. Like the fact that there is no historical recordings anywhere of any type of liberation going on. That there were not hundreds of thousands of enslaved people who rose up in one foul rank and left. I feel like if hundreds of thousands of people left an area, someone would have written something. But there's nothing there. Also, interestingly enough, there were groups that did get recorded as leaving Egypt, of escaping, of liberation, that were called Asiatics, which they didn't specify who, so maybe there were Israelites in that. But again, that would be of hundreds, not hundreds of thousands. They also talk about the miracles that happen in this story, which, funny enough, aren't maybe miracles in and of themselves, but nature, which one could argue is a miracle. But we have quails. Why are quails falling from the sky? That doesn't normally happen. Well, unless you're in Mount Sinai, and it happens to be around the summertime, and the quails are migrating from Africa to Europe. When they get to about Mount Sinai, they actually will fall from the sky from exhaustion, and they will have quail before them out of nowhere. Nature. Migration. There's also an interesting thing when we go and think about manna, about that whatchamacallit. Manna actually may have existed, but not in the way that it's written in Exodus. In the Arabic language in that region, there is a food called manna that comes from the trees in that region. It is a type of honeydew that the trees will excrete a sap that then hardens overnight and falls to the ground in the morning. Wow, I have a feeling something that's called honeydew probably might disappear by midday when it gets hot. Who knows? And yet, this happens only between June and July. I want to ask the question, what's more likely to have happened? Is it more likely that 100,000 people left an area of the world with no records of it, moved in a desert for 40 years, not knowing where they were going, eating food that only shows up in nature 2 months out of the time? Or is it more likely that maybe it was a smaller group that escaped, that went into the wild, that found themselves in the June-July months, having quails fall from the sky, having manna appear on the ground before them? And maybe instead of 40 years, it was really more like 40 days. Who's to say? Yet, I'm more likely to believe that story than one that has hundreds of thousands. Normally I like to have a close finish with my sermons, and I know that this is short because while we share the sermons here at St. Lydia's, I would love for this to be a kind of dialogue, and I would love to know your thoughts and opinions on this as well as your stories when it comes to this. Because I find myself struggling to find my good news in this, because we are in such a heavy world right now. We are looking for places where we know we can make it through whatever desert it is that we are personally or societally going through right now. And I struggle because I don't know that a story about 100,000 people taking 40 years to get their liberation is necessarily as lifting as we need right now, because I'm not going to name names, but it's been a year, and it's also only February, and it's been a year, and if we want to talk about it being a year, we all know what that phrase means in this world nowadays. I don't know that I can put up with that for 40 years, but if I can think about having a small group, having 40 people who I know that I have their backs and they have mine, and we are going to work to have the liberation that we need. And the thought of doing that within, that there can be a change in 40 days, that there can be a change much sooner than 40 years. That to me is more a story of hope that I need personally at this time. So the question I would love to leave to everyone is, where do you find your hope in this? Do you find that you need to hear the grand heroics the bigger than life so that you know that there is something bigger and larger out there? Or is there some grace, is there some solace that we can find in knowing that it probably wasn't that many, that it was a smaller group, and that smaller group band together, and they made it forward? I would love to know from those here where you find your hope in that, the larger story or the smaller.